Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Business is Art on True Chat. We're broadcasting from Cincinnati, Ohio today, and I'm your host, John Umstead. You reach out to me through the True Chat website, through the True Chat web, app. You can find me on Twitter at John Umstead, J-O-N-U-M-S-T-E-A-D. Look for me on LinkedIn, Facebook, and out at my website, plancanvas.net. That's PlanCanvas.net. But find me in one of those forms or fashions, if you would, please. I'd love to hear from you and start a dialogue. We're always interested in your thoughts on each of our episodes of Business is Art, and interested in your thoughts on future topics for the show and even future guests. So please do contact me. My guest today is Mike. Mike has been on the show before. Mike is a business banker at Fifth Third Bank. Welcome to the show, Micah.
Hey, thanks, John, for having me.
Yeah, we're really glad. Yeah, it's good to have you back. So Micah and I were meeting a few weeks ago and just talking about various topics, and the topic of search funds came up, and we decided, hey, that might make a good, interesting topic for this podcast. So Micah agreed to come back and talk to us about search funds. So thanks for both the idea and for coming back, Micah. So for those that perhaps didn't catch you on the first go-around, go back and listen to Micah's episode on Business is Art. But Micah, if you would, please, why don't you go ahead and tell us about yourself and your background?
Yeah, I'll keep it pretty brief since I've been on before. But, yeah, I'm a business banker at Fifth Third. I've been in banking since I was around 17 as a teller, and then also working in corporate finance. I got really tired of looking at a spreadsheet. And then decide I wanted to help small businesses get access to capital, help them grow, create jobs, and expand. And so I took on this role in business banking, helping companies be anywhere from $2 million to $20 to $30 million in revenue. So that's kind of the sweet spot where I play. It's a huge, huge playground, but I have a lot of tools and abilities to help companies all on that range there.
Mm-hmm. And just for listeners, the episode that Micah was on previously was actually entitled Access to Capital. So go back and look for that. We talked about various ways that entrepreneurs and existing businesses can go out and access capital because there are a number of ways. And I think entrepreneurs tend to immediately think, oh, man, I've got to go find an investor and that's free money and all that kind of stuff. So there are some advantages that down that alley, but there are other advantages down other avenues, such as commercial loans. And it may be that a commercial loan is a far better fit for the entrepreneur. So go check that out because I think Micah does a pretty fair job of laying out the pros and cons of the various avenues. So, all right. Well, so Micah, you kind of covered what your role at Fifth Third Bank is, and I know we talked the last time you were on too about how I really see that as a noble role. You know, a lot of times professions like it seems maybe less so today, but historically, you know, bankers, lawyers, certainly always lawyers. You know, politicians. they get a bad rap. I used to be in a band, an alternative rock band, and our guitarist always said, you know, there's only one type of person that's worse than a lawyer, and that is a bar owner. So at least bankers weren't in that mix at that time.
Exactly. At least I didn't make that cut. Yeah. And what's really cool about the role I have now is that it's 80% regular business banker. So when it comes to loans and deposits, you know, processing payments, I can consult and bring solutions for that. But the other 20% is community economic development. So I really get to go in and help low to moderate income areas get access to capital, help the businesses that are there to create more jobs and really create some redevelopment there. So, yeah, I'm excited about the job. And, yeah, hopefully it makes me less of the evil banker that a lot of people have in their imagination.
So community economic development is where it's at. It is the key to prosperity, I believe, in this country and any other country. So it's good stuff that you're doing. Actually, last week on the show, we had Jim Sugarman was our guest, and he heads up a nonprofit organization called 4Gen Now. And we ended up, not by design, just the conversation just kind of took us there, but we ended up there talking about the various avenues to capital, you know, seeking investors versus banking, that sort of thing. So the topic does periodically come up just kind of naturally in the course of conversation as we're talking about business in general. But again, listeners, do go back to Micah's episode to learn a few things for yourself. So, but today, Micah, we're talking about search funds, and this is a little bit different than some of the other avenues that are out there, or options that are out there for entrepreneurs and startups. So let's just jump right into things and see if you can give us a definition of what a search fund is.
So the basic concept of a search fund is usually younger, either professionals or entrepreneurs who they want to run a business, but they may not have an idea, but they know how to, you know, do operations or grow a business or bring in technology to really reinvigorate a business. It gives them an opportunity to bring those skills to a traditional business. So the way a search fund works is that an entrepreneur or two or three decide they're going to raise capital. They go to investors, much like you would see from a venture capital fund or a private equity fund. The difference is usually search funds for the first 1 to 3 years, the funds that are raised are to pay the salary for those that entrepreneur or those entrepreneurs to go out and just find companies that are getting ready to sell. Usually traditional companies where the owner is getting ready to retire, they don't really have a succession plan in place, the kids don't really want to be involved in the business or the grandkids, and they're ready to retire, they've hustled, you know, they're ready to spend time with family and to travel and to relax, and so they're looking to sell the business. And so what the search fund does is it puts kind of younger entrepreneurs and business owners as a succession plan for that business. And so the funds are raised, you have a combination of investor funds and maybe some lending funds as well to purchase the business. And for the first year or so, the managers are kind of just learning, these new business owners kind of learning the business. The great part about a search fund is it allows them to go into a profitable business. You're not turning around a business. You're just taking a business that's already profitable and getting it back on that growth trajectory. So that's kind of a search fund in a nutshell.
Okay. All right. We're going to come back to that. I do want to just share a personal experience of my own, because with the exception of I was not brought in as a part owner, I kind of had almost identical experience to what goes on with the search fund, with that exception of ownership. And it was, you know, I worked for a larger company and was part of a due diligence team. We did an acquisition, and ultimately they said, hey, let's have John run this company. We're going to leave it as a standalone, you know, wholly owned entity, but let's have John go in there and lead it. And at the time, I, you know, that's kind of how they viewed me. I was someone that had high potential, and I think in some ways it was just an experiment. Let's throw him out there. But it was otherwise just as you stated, you know, it took about a year just really getting to understand the business and the business that it was in, you know, the goods and services that it was providing, and getting to know the people and the company culture and that sort of thing before I really took over. It just, as you were describing search funds, it sounded like, gosh, that's exactly what I did, with the exception of there was no ownership opportunity involved. Mm-hmm. So,
and the search fund can also hold multiple companies in its portfolio. So you might have, you know, managers who manage a company for, you know, 5 to 10 years and then move on to the next company and do the same thing, and just build a portfolio or sell off the businesses to private equity or have an IPO.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, let's take a really quick break before we continue. I want to remind our listeners out there to take a moment and check out Business's Art every week. The show is released on Tuesdays by 6 p.m. Eastern Time Zone. and get out there and check out the other True Chat Network shows that are out there, all released various days and time throughout the week, but always on demand and available 24/7 for you to go take a listen to. Let's talk about True Chat's mission statement. True Chat will be the mortal enemy of speculation, innuendo, and stagnation. We'll champion informed opinions and fresh ideas. True Chat will prove that media can be trusted, relied on, and responsible. We won't join the media elite because we're setting a new standard. It's a higher standard. It's a True Chat standard. Now, to ensure that this show maintains the highest ethical standards, we make it easy for you to voice any concerns with today's episode by emailing ethics@truechat.org. Again, that's ethics@truechat.org. And let's turn our attention now back to the topic at hand. We are talking about search funds, and my guest is Micah Dixon. He's a business banker and community development leader with Fifth Third Bank. So, Micah, in the first few minutes, we talked a little bit about search funds, and you gave a bit of a definition. Let's dive a little bit deeper. I think you touched on some of these mm-hmm. things, but let me ask more directly, what's the difference between a search fund and any other typical investor-type fund that might be out there?
Well, a typical investor fund, normally, you know, venture capital, private equity, they kind of, they're more advisors. They're purchasing stakes in multiple businesses that are being ran by other people. And they want a seat on the board and some advisory roles, but they don't necessarily run the business. Or they bring in a CEO to run the business. The search fund, really, the ones who are managing the fund are actually the ones who are going to end up managing the business that is purchased. If you look at what is designated success for a search fund, of course, it's buying a company and having it grow and making a lot of money. The second best scenario is actually for them not to buy a company, for them to kind of shut down the fund and say, hey, look, we couldn't find something that fit kind of our criteria. We're gonna walk away. And then the worst scenario is buying a bad company and losing investor money. So really, the whole point of it is that the initial offering is to kind of pay the salary for those managers to find deals and get some deal flow. But ultimately, it's to purchase one company and have it grow. And that's the difference between that and other investor funds. Other investor funds, you know, they're taking multiple shots. A search fund is trying to take one good shot at finding a winner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a couple of things I'd like to add here, if I may. One is just right at the tail end, what you were just saying. And it's also something we talked about when you were on the show before, something we talked about last week with Jim Sugarman, when investors are investing in companies, they probably don't wholeheartedly believe in what you're doing. They are gambling to a pretty great extent, and they know that, and they know that the majority of their gambles are not going to pay off, but they don't need them to. Versus, a bank loan. If a bank lends a business a commercial loan, they feel pretty good about what you're doing. They might not buy into kind of the heart and soul of the matter. They don't really need to. They just have to believe that it is a viable business model and that you're going to do okay. And if they don't feel that way, they aren't going to provide you with the loan. The search fund, I think, is a little bit different because I think you get all of that in here, right? You're not gambling. You're really taking it's still a risk, but you're taking a calculated risk. But you really believe in what you're doing, right? You believe in yourself, and you believe in what you're going after. So it brings all of that together.
Absolutely.
One thing, though, just to be clear for everyone, we are talking about, with search funds, we are talking about acquisitions of existing businesses as opposed to startups, right?
Correct. So these are existing businesses that have been around. Normally, you're talking about businesses that are between $10 to $30 million in revenue and about $1.5 million in EBITDA, or earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization. So these are sizable companies. They've been around for a while. They have a reputation. They're already managed well. They just are not on a growth trajectory because the owner has chosen not to have them on a growth trajectory. So, yeah, they're not startups. They're established businesses.
Mm-hmm. And I want to jump ahead a little bit because one of the questions that I fully intended to ask you in this podcast is the size and types of businesses that are typically targets for search funds. So you kind of hit the size there. How about industries? Mm-hmm. Are there any particular types of industries that tend to make either make better acquisition targets or that just tend to be acquisition targets when we're talking about search funds?
It's kind of more broader criteria. So normally the industry has to be pretty large mm-hmm. and pretty fragmented as well. So you don't want an industry that is kind of stagnant and also where there's a lot of consolidation when it comes to competition. You want an industry that's growing, up and coming, but that's pretty large as well. Mm-hmm. And then also I think it has to do with the passions of the prospective entrepreneurs. You know, what do they really feel like they want to go work in and day out? Is it an industry that they enjoy or that they could, you know, see themselves enjoying, that they have some knowledge about or some background? But also, have they built the kind of advisory? Because the investors who are giving their funds to this search fund, you know, do those advisors have a background in some of these businesses that you're looking at or in those industries? Can mm-hmm. they be good advisors as well? So there's a lot of criteria, but really you want, you know, something that there's a lot of potential for. You don't want to buy a declining or dying industry.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, this kind of reminds me of another bit of the conversation that you and I had when we decided to talk about search funds on the show. And we were talking about a couple of specific industries, particularly trade industries like HVAC and electric, plumbing, you know, those sorts of trades that have become increasingly mm-hmm. more difficult for business owners to staff, to find good employees that are willing to do the often hard and always dirty work that goes along with those mm-hmm. trades. Just find employees, let alone find successors to their businesses. So how do you think those types of industries or businesses might factor into search funds?
No, I think those are great candidates, especially, I mean, you know, as we're speaking, you know, there's a possible infrastructure bill that could be going to Congress and being approved by the president. So mm-hmm. you're looking at a lot more construction. But at the same time, you have businesses that are in the trades that are, you know, the owners are ready to retire. So mm-hmm. you have this potential for growth. You know, you need HVAC, you need plumbing, you need electrical work. But the number of businesses that are actually doing that work is beginning to decline. Mm-hmm. So that's a perfect candidate. Those type of industries are perfect candidates for these search funds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of interesting, you know, that in those sidetrack a little bit, in those industries, you hear particularly homeowners complain about, you know, I need an electrician and I can't even get anyone to answer the phone when I call around mm-hmm. to the half dozen electricians that are in my general area. And that's pretty common. And it's not that they are complacent or nonchalant about their business. It's that they... A lot of them don't even literally have time to pick up the phone. They are so busy and in such high demand right. that they either can't pick up the phone or don't need to. And it's frustrating for the consumer. But if you're in that mm-hmm. trade, boy, you know, that's a kind of perfect scenario when demand is so high that you don't even have to go out and try to get new customers. You just have to take good care of the ones that you have.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and think about it. For as long as there's civilization, there'll always be toilets, right?
So, you know, I hope so. Yeah.
The mission will not go away.
Yeah, we can all hope. We don't need to be walking around in Depends.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, man. All right. Well, we've gotten a little bit off base with so let's swing things back. So, again, we've kind of talked about some of these, but I wonder if you can hit the highlights or repeat some of the highlights of what advantages search funds have over other types of funds and other types of acquisitions.
So I would say that the big advantage for search funds is especially for, you know, a lot of millennials want to own a business. You know, entrepreneurship is kind of the sexy industry right now. Mm-hmm. And it's not even an industry, it's a profession, it's a skill set. But everybody wants to be an entrepreneur, but they also want, everyone wants to create an app, or they think they have to go to Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. This allows for a millennial who's serious about owning and running a business, mm-hmm. to be able to do that and do it without some of the headaches of starting something from scratch. I mean, if you're buying a profitable business that's making, you know, $10 to $30 million in revenue, the owners are getting a salary. You may not get the exact same salary, but mm-hmm. you'll be able to get a salary. You have a business that gives you some cushion to maybe make some mistakes as you're running the business. And you don't have that same cushion if you start something from scratch or you're in a startup. So mm-hmm. there's some advantages there for younger business owners. There's some advantages there for those who are selling their business. You now have somebody who's taking over the business, who's young, who's hungry, who wants to grow the business. You can structure the deal to kind of benefit from that upside as they grow the business. So there's some advantages for the buyer and the seller. And then also, it's just good for our economy as a whole. A lot of these businesses employ a lot of people who mm-hmm. do good work, and it allows for those businesses to continue and even grow mm-hmm. so that those people can continue to live the American dream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, again, harkening back to my own experience, when I took over that company, it was a great company, had great culture, but the one thing that I didn't like was that it really had become kind of comfortable, you know, and really mm-hmm. had stopped growing, and in some cases was beginning to lose some market share, and I could be wrong, but it was just kind of the general feeling that I had amongst the mm-hmm. everyone that worked there that I was okay. And, you know, and I came in with a little bit of a different attitude. I just thought there was an awful lot of untapped potential there and a lot of growth opportunity, so let's tap into it. And I love telling this story, but, you know, I set in motion a plan to put a plan together, a plan to plan, basically. I included literally 100% of the employee base in that in the development of that plan by polling them. I'd have informal meetings with groups of people that wouldn't typically interact with me on a, you know, on any kind of great basis on any given day, and I'd ask. And I put suggestion boxes up at our multiple facilities and collected those up. And the question that was posed was, how do we get to $50 million in annual revenue, because it was at about $21 million at the time. And I will just never forget one of the submissions that I pulled out of one of the suggestion boxes said, why would we ever want to do that? it summed up my suspicions perfectly, you know, that maybe not right. everybody, but there were certainly some people that had absolutely no interest in growing that company. They were good with it. It's good just the way it is. You know, we don't need to do anything to grow it. And I don't know, Mike, there's nothing inherently wrong with that unless you happen to be working in a place where the desire is to grow. Right? Mm-hmm. Everyone is different. Every place of business is different. But anyway, I'm babbling on, but I always love sharing that story because it just goes to show that just because you think it's a great idea doesn't mean everybody is going to.
True. I mean, at the same time, like that experience, and I'm sure, you know, just you polling the employees and talking to the employees, mm-hmm. I mean, anyone who's even thinking about doing a search fund or who has a search fund right now, they need to listen to that advice, right? Somebody who's walked the path, you mm-hmm. know, because I can't tell you how many business owners I run into, they have no clue what their employees think about the business, and there are huge holes or huge gaps in efficiency. So, mm-hmm. yeah, that the point is well taken, that if you want to grow, it helps to have a lot of voices and know what the culture is, then so you know where you are and where you want to go.
Yeah, you know, I just wrote over the weekend a piece that I submitted to, it's not published yet, it's not even approved yet, but I submitted it to the National Center for the Middle Market, which I contribute to every once in a while. But I recently had been looking at the percentage of strategies that fail in the U.S. business strategies that fail, and it's pretty high, only about 30%. This is according to the American Management Association, estimates that only about 30% of business strategies come to a successful conclusion. And I was pretty bad number. And I was simultaneously looking, so anyways, back on topic. So I was simultaneously looking at employee engagement in the U.S. And there, and for 15 or 16 years, there it is again. Hey, Camden, our producer, we can hear you. I don't know if you can hear us. All right, there we go. Sorry about that. could you hear that, Micah, or was it just me going crazy?
I could hear it. I could hear
okay.
it.
All right.
Here we go.
I think it's either going to bleed through or not, and our listeners are going to wonder what the heck we're talking about. But anyway, back to the topic. So I was looking at the level of engagement of employees in the U.S., and Gallup has done survey year after year since 2001 or so time frame, and it has consistently come back with, hey, the level of engaged employees in the U.S. is under 33%. So only a third or less of employees in the U.S. are actually engaged in the business which they're employed. So again, pretty low, but those numbers are almost identical. Right, you've got about 33% and less employees who are engaged in the business, and you've only got about 30% of business strategies that are ever successful. And I've got to believe that there is a correlation. And I further believe that, you know, it's no coincidence that those numbers are identical. But I further believe that strategy and company culture go hand in hand. And so to your point, you know, anyone going into search funds, you need to listen to this. You can't go in with guns blazing and think you're going to change the world because chances are good. Just like if a big company bought a smaller company and just demolished the culture, you're probably going to erode the value that was in that business when you did the acquisition. So pay attention. Get to know the culture. Doesn't mean don't change the culture. It means just get to know it, get to understand it before you begin building and implementing a new strategy, because culture and strategy have to be in lockstep. They go hand in hand, and part of your culture development is part of your strategic plan development. So involve everyone as much as you can in the development of the strategy in order to include the culture in it, and vice versa. And again, I'm getting down in the weeds here a little bit, but this is stuff that I've just been recently taking another look at. I do talk about it in the book Businesses Art as well, but revisited here of late. Oh,
it's perfect. It's perfect. I mean, I talk to business all the time, and I talk, hey, culture is important. Culture is, I mean, if you want an example of what can happen when you don't focus on culture, go look at Uber and the hole they're digging themselves out of. You know, they did not focus on culture from the beginning, and now look at where they are.
Or they focus on the wrong type of culture.
agreed.
Oh, man. Yeah. All right. Well, again, sorry to dive so deep into that, but just triggered a couple of thoughts. So now, am I correct? My understanding is that search funds may not necessarily be put together by the people that are going to go out, do the acquisition, and run the company. But there are also search funds where the group that has put the fund together really, truly are investors, and they go out and search for that next leader that they want to bring in to whatever they should happen to acquire next. Is that correct?
That can happen. Mm-hmm. There are certain efforts. So let's say, you know, I work at a large Fortune 500 company. I've expressed desire. At some point, I want to own my own company, but I'm not actively going out creating a search fund. Mm-hmm. You know, some investors might get together and say, hey, we want to purchase this company, and we want to have this person run it. Mm-hmm. But normally, what I normally see is MBA students out of, you know, Stanford, Chicago, Booth. They're the ones that are pretty proactive in creating the search fund. Mm-hmm. But there are occasions where, you know, hey, we got a bunch of, you know, young, hungry, want to be entrepreneurs. Let's pick somebody off the bench and have them run this company. But mm-hmm. it has to start with that executive having that desire. Because mm-hmm. with a search fund, you might be called to move to, you know, out in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And if you have, you know, wife, kids, you know, and you don't want to move out to there, you know, if you don't have that desire in the first place, then it's kind of dead in the water. So you have to mm-hmm. express that desire.
Yeah, yeah. So this might be the million-dollar question then. How does one get involved in search funds?
So from there, two aspects. If you are looking to raise a search fund and you're looking to purchase a business, it would be a lot like how you would raise, you know, start a venture capital firm or a private equity firm. You go and you look for investors who normally invest in search funds. Mm-hmm. You can also approach high net worth individuals who, you know, looking for alternative investments. Looking through your personal network of maybe former work colleagues, you know, friends and family, wealthy individuals that might be in your personal circle who you know and who know you and can trust you, or it could be other business owners. So really successful business owners who have some extra capital. They may be mentors to you or someone who you really admire. They might be willing to help with raising the search fund. If you're an investor, that's one of those things you can approach your maybe financial advisor about alternative investments. Mm-hmm. They're also usually because search funds are done by younger individuals, they put up a website, they do a prospectus, so you should be able to find them that way as well. And mm-hmm. then having a conversation with that person and making sure that's the type of person you want to entrust your funds to. Mm-hmm. So that's how you get involved on either side of that.
Okay, and straight to the banker's point of view, can you ever envision a bank saying to a would-be customer, yeah, we want to get behind your effort to go out and find something, you know, so we're going to give you this this loan even though you don't have the business yet, and buy you time to go out and find it. Is that a possibility, or do you see that as just not ever going to be a starter?
I would say we wouldn't necessarily give money for the beginnings of the search fund. Mm-hmm. But let's say that the search fund does find an acquisition target, and mm-hmm. they're beginning to put together the acquisition. A bank would be willing to lend money mm-hmm. for that acquisition, given how the capital structure is. So we'd mm-hmm. have to look at what the capital structure is, who's going to be owning it, kind of who's going to be guaranteeing that loan. Mm-hmm. But lending and debt can be a part of that acquisition. So yeah. we wouldn't come in as they're looking for the business. We mm-hmm. would come in once they found the acquisition target, once they know that's the business they want to go with. That's when a bank would step in and kind of help with the funding of that acquisition.
Okay. Good, good. Fair enough. I wanted to get that point out there because I didn't want people thinking that, oh, there's no play for a bank in this world. There is. It's just not up front.
So, yes.
Thank you.
Right. Time. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So, Micah, we're well past the half hour mark. I took us down a couple of rabbit holes, and I apologize for that. But before we wrap things up, I want to make sure we've covered all of the things you want to talk about with respect to search funds. So if there's anything that we've left on the table, let's get it out now.
No, I think we covered everything I want to talk about.
Okay. All right, good. Well, good. Okay, so Micah, where can people find you or any other causes that you'd like to mention while we're on the show?
So you can find me on LinkedIn. It's just Micah Dixon, M-I-C-A-H, Dixon, D-I-C-K-S-O-N, on LinkedIn. that's probably the best way to contact me. And if you're looking for more information on search funds, look up Stanford University. They have a great, just thorough report on search funds and the whole process of it. So that's what I would say.
That's really where the concept was born, isn't it, out of Stanford several years ago?
Yes, I believe so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so, too. Okay. All right, good. Well, hey, I can attest to the fact that Micah is an avid user of LinkedIn. He's constantly sharing good content out there on any number of topics, some local, some without respect to any geographical area whatsoever. So look him up on LinkedIn and follow his feeds. He's always sharing good stuff. Speaking of good stuff, Micah, thanks for being on the show. This was a great topic. I really appreciate you bringing it to my attention and agreeing to be on to talk about it today.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
All right. So let's put a wrap on things, folks. If you haven't already, make sure you download TrueChat's mobile app. You can connect with us on social media right in the app itself or visit our website, truechat.org. That's T-R-U-E-C-H-A-T. .org. Again, that's truechat.org. TrueChat's network offers a great lineup of shows on sports and politics, pop culture, entertainment, business, lifestyle, and more. So make sure you explore what our network has to offer. And for businesses art on TrueChat, broadcasting from Cincinnati, Ohio, I'm your host, John Umstead. Again, look me up on Twitter, LinkedIn, plancanvas.net website, any number of ways. But go out and find me, please. Thank you very much for tuning in. We'll see you next time on Business is Art, Being the Change.